So, Jeff, is it chicken or egg, the architect or the artist, or which developed what?
Well, it's a bit of both. And at this point, I'm really just focusing on my artistic career. But it started with architecture a long, long time ago. I'm a sustainable architect. And, you know, after a 30-year career designing sustainable buildings, now I'm moving on to sustainable sculpture, partly because, well, the big recession 10 years ago really stopped my career. By that, what I mean is that we were doing some wonderful building projects and all, but things just went bad for a long time. And I found myself making more and more art to compensate for the lack of creativity in architecture at that time. And so one thing led to another, and I found I was doing art exhibitions and participating in sustainable art events more and more. And so I decided to go back to the university, get my MFA, my master's degree in fine arts, and then just pursue a career as a sculptor. And this is what I've been doing now for the past several years. But you could say that my interest has always been in art, architecture, design, in the creative fields.
And certainly architecture is an art form in itself. I certainly don't want to downgrade that, although it sounds like you were missing that artistic field.
Well, for a while, it was like that. And, you know, what I'm saying is, you know, after a 30-year career, I guess I'm revealing my age now, right? but after a 30-year career doing sustainable buildings, why, I was seeing things just sort of evaporate, because it really was a big, big recession. And if you could find a job, it would be a boring, dull box sort of a thing. And there's plenty of opportunity to make art. And so I jumped on that. I pursued that at a time when, you know, the world economy was in dire straits. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad for the transformation, too, because as an artist, I'm much freer to express myself, have a lot fewer constraints. But I also bring, you know, a lot of discipline and rigor into the artwork, too. That's because I was trained as an architect. I did do architecture for a long time. Mm-hmm. And so I'm an artist now, but you can't take the architect out of this artist.
And obviously the climate crisis interest, an interest of, we could call it activism, must have come even before the architecture, since you were, as you said, sustainable architecture in your work.
Absolutely. And I sort of grew and evolved along with this. And so in the late 20th century, early 21st century, LEED became a thing to do for designers. Do you know what LEED AP means?
I do, yeah.
You know, okay, leadership and environmental and energy design. And so that's the kind of accredited professional that I was, because I followed these trends. And I worked overseas. I worked in Europe for 15 years. I worked in the Middle East for 15 years. And I got my sustainable credentials in the Middle East as well, working in the desert climate, which is quite different from over here in the United States. And so I pursued this as much as it was developing through the profession. And then, you know, at this point, it's just turned into a much freer and wide open artistic pursuit, where I can then choose to look at certain things in order to express, you know, climate change, mm-hmm. Ecological issues, and that sort of thing.
You were even an art director in Dubai for a while. I'm wondering, from all that you saw in those travels, how did you perceive how people are responding to climate crisis overseas rather than here? And did that influence your art in different ways?
Well, people are very open to ecological issues like this. And I've always found a receptive audience when it comes to doing sustainable architecture or sustainable art, for that matter, because people feel good about doing something for the climate, something for the earth. And so this is very encouraging to be working in a domain which people will, they understand it more or less, but at least they do accept it, kind of a thing. And so I have something to say. I'm still trying to find the way to say it as a visual artist. But what I've discovered is that if I search out ways to express the emotional aspects of climate change, this has a big impact. In other words, I'll work with burnt pine wood from a burnt forest fire, for instance, and display this for the public as an art installation. And I can see that people are touched by this, to see the physical charcoal standing there, the burnt tree limbs hanging, you know, on chains, and the barn wood that's been destroyed in too many storms, you know, and wrecked over time. And I try to find ways to bring in emotion to the artwork in order to touch people. Because once I've done that, then I think I can get a message across more strongly.
When I look at your work, you put together things that you find perhaps on a beach or discarded plastic or what we might call trash, and you make it look beautiful. So there's a kind of beauty in our trash. So I thought you might talk about that. The colors are so bright, and at the same time, the message is, look what we leave behind.
That's right. And so, for instance, some of the trash that you're seeing on my website, I collected right there in Western Michigan. You know, I went up and down Lake Michigan to various different beaches, and I found all this detritus. And if I clean it, then the colors come out, because all of our plastic stuff really is very colorful, isn't it? And I put it in jars and I display it nicely, but it's litter. I mean, you know, the fundamental thing is waste and littering, and, you know, there's a fundamental sort of destruction about it, but it can still be pretty. So then there is this distinction, isn't there, between what's pretty to look at and what is really the bad effect on the environment. And I like these contrasts. I try to play them up as much as I can, as a matter of fact. And then at the same time, if I go out into nature, I can find things that are just as colorful by looking at the plants. Weeds and wildflowers will have lovely yellow and red colors in them. And I like to highlight what I can find in the plant life as well that's also colorful, even if it's just weeds and things growing up in between the cracks in the sidewalk, you know, the mundane places where we go, and try to pick something that's from there, that's precious, that I can show in a visually appealing way, but always trying to talk about the effect on the environment, whether it's invasive plants or litter that people are invading us with. And the whole idea is to go for contrast, visual contrast, so that people, if they react emotionally, they'll think about what it means for the planet.
And we could group your artwork into three different categories: event-based, site-specific installations, found object artworks. If you could talk briefly about the three groupings that you do.
That's right. And all of these groupings use basically found objects or things that I'm finding in nature to work with. So event-based artworks, for instance, this would be the forest fire that I just mentioned, where I find burnt wood from a forest fire. In this case, it was up in Cadillac, Michigan. 100 acres had been burnt. And so then I hang the burnt tree trunks in the art studio on metal chains. It's a metaphor of hanging ourselves. Mm-hmm. We're hanging ourselves by burning our forests and climate change that's heating up the planet. And these event-based artworks are not easy to do. The difficulty is finding the event, and which is as opposed to finding a site to do some artwork. So for me, an event is a burnt forest fire. It's a collapsed barn. It might be a tree that fell down in the storm. And then I'll do a pantomime of the tree blowing down in the storm. kind of a thing. So finding an event is a difficult thing to do. I'm always looking for an event. Site-based artworks, however, this is exactly what it means. I go to a place and find something that related to the ecology there to make some sort of a sustainable remark through my art. And I do art residencies throughout the country, going to different places, different sites, to work with native plants or native materials that I find to try to express something about that particular place. So, for instance, in South Carolina, there's a forest with a lot of eroded ground. And so I placed wood that I found from the forest in the form of erosion control grid of wood on the ground to try to talk about how this eroded forest is dying out. But, you know, we still have ways of mitigating this, and it's due to flooding and overproduction, or, you know, too much logging in the forest led to this erosion. And so I used the logs from the logging to talk about a remedy kind of a thing. And in another site, I just found a pile of wood that a forester had left behind when he was culling out all the dead trees. And so I just sharpened up the wood trunks, painted them like they were large, oversized colored pencils, and then left it at that. It's just something that I found in the forest. Finally, I work with found objects. That means, you know, going through the beach to pick up the litter, or even just going through the neighborhood and finding stuff. You know, during COVID, people are throwing away their masks and their gloves. The PPE just ends up in the sidewalks, in the streets. So I pick this up too, and I try to use those materials, these found materials, to make compositions of one kind or another, and try to bring out a notion of the plastic, the metal, all the throwaway stuff from our society, and try to make artwork out of it so that it doesn't look like trash anymore. I want to transform it into something colorful, something fun, because the story doesn't have to always be a sad story. I'm having fun making art and talking about sustainable issues.
Was there a particular event or experience or site that moved you to focus your art on climate crisis?
No, not in particular. This really evolved over a long period of time. I've been doing art for like 15, 20 years, and I really abandoned my architecture career, let's say, you know, 6 or 7 years ago to focus uniquely on this. But one thing leads to another. And I work at a big scale anyway because of my background. And so using found materials, making large-scale installations, yes, this is sort of in my DNA, if you will. And I'm not afraid of working at a big scale. I'm not afraid of going outdoors and, you know, working in the landscape at a landscape-type scale. And now, with the coronavirus, we've had a bit of a different lifestyle. We're more isolated. Price of materials has gone up. I find myself working more and more in nature and less in the studio. I'm recycling materials that I find because buying materials is expensive. If you can even find equipment or materials, it's horribly expensive now. So I'm making ephemeral artwork. I'm working with grass and other living materials to make patterns in the grass that then disappear in time. And this is because the ephemeral nature is very sustainable, but I'm doing it because of coronavirus. And this is a very unexpected thing for me to be getting into. Without COVID-19, I wouldn't be going down. This is like a fourth path. That's not on my website yet. It's something new that I'm exploring, but I love it because it's a new direction in my artwork, and I like to renew what I'm doing.
And pretty soon, in November, you'll be the artist resident at the Prairie Rond Artist Residency. What is the project that you're working on? I understand it's something about a mile marker series. Can you tell us about it?
Yes. So my proposal is to use found materials from Vicksburg around Prairie Rond. Use this along with resin and concrete and plaster to create mile marker type of sculptures. By that I mean smallish sculptures that would sit on the ground, but be made from elements from the ground. That is, you know, the concrete, soil, or clay from the locality, along with bits of plastic and metal that I would find in the streets, things that people throw away. The idea is that I want to go big this time. This is a six-month residency, and so now what I'd like to do is go very tall and make big, long cylinders, which would be more like core samples. And what I'm thinking is, if archaeologists discover our civilization 1,000 years from now by drilling down and finding core samples, what are they going to find? It's going to be the Coke cans and the McDonald's wrappers that we've thrown away, all the junk that's mixed in with the soil and the stones and the water table. And I'm trying to mix together all of these elements, the earth and our thrown away pieces, into large, tall sculptural elements. And I'm not quite sure what this is going to look like. I'm transforming an existing artwork that used to be called mile markers. Now I'm going to make core samples, something like, 8-10 feet high kind of thing.
Well, the process is always one of discovery, isn't it?
It is. Discovery also of technique. So this is a wet process that I've described, working with resin and plaster and concrete. And so fortunately, at Prairie Ronde, they have very large studio spaces, which I'm going to need because I'll be working at a big scale, but this time indoors because it's November, December. Right. I won't be able to do this outdoors. Although this is the kind of thing that wants to be public artwork, you know, large scale, made from elements from outdoors. But I'll put them indoors and try to play up the contrast between, the outdoor elements that I've now put inside and made a big scale. So we'll see how this goes. I'm very excited to work on some new techniques to get there.
Oh, it'll be exciting to see what the end result is of all of this. So thank you so much for your time, Jeff, and telling us about your artwork, and we will be looking for it out in Vicksburg.
Yes, do. I'm there from the 1st of November until the 15th of December.